And now I invite Chris and all panelists to join me here to gather around those microphones. And I guess some of the... Please. Yeah. I think at least there's been more or less, I guess, commented by all of you about the governance and the need for institutional strengthening, etc. So may I ask first, Chris, a comment or two on some of the issues that brought up AAA, for instance. What do you take on that?
Boy, I don't know. Maybe I won't take that one. I think I've laid it out pretty much as I felt. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think actually I want to comment on a couple of other issues.
Yeah, please. See if that's pick two.
Yeah. Just briefly related to what Dr. Nungu said, 2 points. The issue of regional projects, I was very pleased to hear that you said that from Kenya's point of view, African Development Bank has been very good in that. That seems to be clearly an area where they should be doing more. And I'm actually interested to hear what the obstacles are that they're not doing more, because they've been talking about doing more and more regional projects for years, and it hasn't really gotten off the ground in the way that they have predicted. But it's good to hear that that's something that Kenya sees as positive from the African Bank. Actually, the point that I wanted to mention that Anders Borg brought up was the private sector issue and this idea, which I didn't talk about on my presentation, about creating sort of an IFC-type institution at the African Bank. So there's not even a separate vice presidency at the moment for private sector operations. It's just sort of part of their general lending. And that seems to me, I know this has been discussed within the African Bank for years, but it seems to me very important to develop this sort of different type of institutional culture and ways, speaking the language of the private sector, which a lot of these people that just deal with governments, they don't know the language, they don't know the way the private sector operates. And I think that would be very important. Whether it needs to be a separate vice presidency or an entire separate institution is another question. The advantages might be creating a separate balance sheet for the private sector, which could be used in a more effective way, for example, by not having AAA.
Which I would be in agreement.
Yeah. But of course there's risks, and that's what the IFC is often, I don't know, accused might be too strong of a word, but they're often brought up short because they're too focused on getting the projects done, making money, basically. They're sort of wannabe investment bankers in a way. And they lose sight sometimes of the development objectives of the institution because they're so focused on closing deals. So that's an area that I think the African Bank would have to watch out for if it were to create a separate institution. But overall, I agree very much. And thanks very much, by the way, for the positive comments all around about the paper.
Professor Nguna, on regional projects, what is your take? Is the bank up and running for that?
I think the problem here is that it's the technology of financing regional projects that we haven't perfected. Because I think this is where we would like to see most of the enclaves, economic enclaves in Africa, it's because of accessibility problem. Now, if you look at the totality of regional projects that have been financed over time, there are very few. It's because of the bilateral agreements and all that, that brings problems. So essentially, we need to come back and ask ourselves, do we have the technology of financing regional projects in a way that is going to be quite, should I say, effective? And maybe the African Development Bank is the first one to actually take this head on. For example, they are talking about even the water, the Lake Victoria waterways, and they are talking about connectivity to the African, to the grid, to the electricity grid in Southern Africa. These are the things that we need to encourage. But the most important thing is, and this is where the private sector should come in, is the technology of financing those regional projects.
Do we need even more open borders? It reminds me, I was in a discussion a few years ago on EU, and someone claimed, I think it's American, that one of the most forceful development policy frameworks that have ever been established is the community care, acquis communautaire, because it opened the borders in Europe, and that made development happen. So maybe open markets will be one key in that direction. Anders Borg, on private sector, what's up for the bank? Should they have an IFC Africa?
I think I will do like this. I definitely agree with what's been said on the private sector involvement here. I would like to say that part of it has to do with capital, part has to do with much broader issues. When I look at the companies that we run in Africa, Bima, Konga, Jumia, the biggest e-commerce operator. What we are doing is basically bringing and developing technology in Africa that is state-of-the-art for e-commerce with very, very strong African entrepreneurs. What we can contribute is basic capital is important, but even more so, I would argue, governance to bring on the board structures, the corporate social responsibility issues, the sustainability issues. So I think there are so many different ways that we can cooperate. And the key role here for the private sector is, as was pointed out, the private sector and jobs. And for the development banks, I would argue that the key role is much more oriented towards infrastructure, ports, road, railways, and then we can think about how the interface between these two kind of investments can play a role.
Anna, would you like to comment on the private sector angle?
I agree with what you said about the focus of development bank, that it should really be infrastructure. And what you see, both the latest survey Ernst & Young did and also the World Bank, was that the biggest of this, limitation of doing business in Africa is lack of infrastructure. And it's both about energy, but it's also about transportation and so on. So if the development banks really can make a difference there, it will be easier to get investment into Africa. So that is one point. And then I also see a great opportunity for the banks to work closer with the DFIs and private sector in that kind of project. The report is mentioned Lake Turkana in Kenya, where both the African Development Bank and a lot of the Nordic DFIs are working together. And what you do there is that you can take different kind of risk and using different instruments depending on your own level and possibility to be long-term or shorter-term. And I think that is a good example.
If I compare Africa Development Bank with the Inter-American and Asia Development Bank, there is one key difference, maybe a more difference, but one key is that in Latin America and in Asia, the major economies borrow from the bank. But that is not the case in Africa. We don't have South Africa, Nigeria, Egypt, etc. borrowing. So how could we come about that the main potential borrowers should borrow from the bank? And maybe, I don't know, but maybe this transaction cost is part of that. It takes another 24 months before you get the first disbursement after you have put in a loan offer. So what kind of responsibility does shareholders have in that, in the boards of executive directors, etc., that there are so many benchmark challenges, etc., that it takes more or less 24 months to get a loan to be?
If I could give you a fast answer, I don't think the... When I said broadening the scope of action, I wasn't basically thinking about South Africa. South Africa is well banked. They have a very, very strong banking sector that is now moving north into the rest of Africa. So when I was said broadening, I was basically, I think we still should keep the bank oriented towards development and less developed countries than South Africa, but maybe broaden the mandate with that kind of limits.
At the same time, if I read Chris' report, he thinks that could strengthen the bank if you have the main potential borrowers, at least gaining some net income that eventually will float into the soft window. So Chris, and I would like Ulrike also to comment on that.
Sure, yeah. I mean, China also borrows from the World Bank. China's pretty well banked also. Yeah, it's almost a philosophical point of whether you think the bank should still be involved in countries like that. I mean, South Africa has huge pockets of poverty and development need that are not receiving resources that it could use. So I would suggest that there is still a role for the African Development Bank there. One might easily argue that other countries need it a lot more, and fair enough in that regard. But it is important for all of these banks to have a strong portfolio with the middle-income country borrowers for the reasons that I laid out earlier, at least in my view, that's the case. And part of the reason why is, of course, these procedures that we've spoken about a bit. And as that sort of leads to the question that you put out there in your intervention about how do we balance the idea of sort of loosening up, stepping back a little bit, but yet still ensuring quality. How do they deal with the risks, as you put it? And that's, I mean, that's obviously the crucial issue. And it's a continuum that there's no clear answer for, obviously. But it seems pretty clear that the bank... certainly the African Bank and the World Bank have gone a bit too far in the other direction. I mean, I think of things like safeguards, which is an issue I thought about a lot. And the whole approach of these banks, the African Bank as well, is to create this sort of parallel universe of procedures that only work whenever a country wants to borrow from the bank. They have to use this totally separate set of procedures that have nothing to do with their own national laws. And that seems problematic for a lot of reasons. It's very understandable that the shareholders want to make sure that they're not creating problems, social impacts and what have you. But is that the best way? It's almost like the shareholders, the non-borrowers in particular, kind of want to keep their hands clean. We don't want to have any problems with our projects, so we can tell our constituents that we didn't create a mess with our money. But are they really thinking about the best way to improve the systems of the country in doing that? Because, of course, all the other projects that the country does doesn't go through these safeguards. They use the national laws. So what's the best way? I don't know. But it seems like a new approach might be needed, because the danger is, especially with the safeguards, countries just go somewhere else. They take money from somewhere else. And that means that the effect of the safeguards can sometimes be, especially with big infrastructure projects, pushing governments away from working with the banks at all, which is also not the result that I think the shareholders are looking for. So yeah, balance certainly needs to be struck.
Ulrika, please, comment on that.
No, but I think that you said that the other development banks are different, but at the same time, as far as I understand, coming into this area, the development banks are with the same new situation, that they are actually competing on a new market of banks, and that many of the countries that have been traditional recipients of aid are now, I mean, they have the possibility to choose where to go to lend for their projects. But my hope would be that we can work with safeguards, and that that could be actually part of the quality of the banks, because I think that this is where the future is. I mean, that we could see that governments would turn into, or private companies, if that would be the case, would turn to the banks to see that they get long-term sustainable quality in their investment. And this is why I also want to frame it within the agenda, for instance, of the Sustainable Development Goals. And this will also be discussed in the meeting in Addis Ababa on financing for development. But of course, I mean, bureaucracy is one thing, and safeguards maybe don't have to be part of a very bureaucratic procedure. I mean, maybe it's possible to align with, I mean, I think many countries have quite good legislation, and maybe then it's possible to find a way to align with the national legislation, and that could ease up the bureaucracy if that is the problem. But I think the safeguards are very important, and not only important to us as donors, but important to the global community for our common future, and especially for people living in poverty. But I think that also what is interesting is also, and that I brought up before, the problem on the one hand side that we need to direct more funding to the least developed countries, because what we see in the more traditional aid is that less of the traditional aid is actually going to the least developed countries. At the same time, as you point out in your report, the middle-income countries like South Africa and others need perhaps to be part of the project of the bank. And then the question is it possible also to the regional projects that you bring up are very interesting, I think, to look at, and how can we as part of the bank also support this development to see how we can do good on smart grids for renewable energy, for instance, I would like to see.
Now, on China was mentioned a number of times in your report, Chris, and also in the comments, and I think, Anders, you mentioned that there are three, or some of you mentioned that $3 billion investment in Ghana, and of course China is a great player, but Professor Nguna, how do you see China versus, or in relationship to the African Development Bank, do they play a critical role in the bank, or is it a co-financing, or is it a competition, or how do you deal with China and Kenya, for instance, deal with, or of course, how do you attract Chinese capital?
Actually, maybe stepping back, you can actually say that there are two challenges even when we look at long-term finance. It's actually who are the providers of this long-term finance. If China can be one of the players, it means that it increases the quantum. And that's one aspect of it. But of course, when you look at the projects that have been financed by the African Development Bank and executed by Chinese companies, is again, you can see that it's a whole issue of who brings the technology on the table. The latest successful project in Kenya, for example, the Thika Superhighway, the designers were Indian companies, and the contractors were the Chinese companies. The question was, why was it possible? It was a competition, all right, but why was it possible? It's because they are capable of bringing in technology at cheap cost, and so they are able to outcompete. So essentially, you have to look at it in terms of the reception at the regional level. But I'm more concerned with the quantum, because what we're really saying is that Africa rising, it means that the quantity of long-term finance required is going to increase as well. Who is going to be the provider of that? Are we going to maybe ask for supplementation from the African governments like South Africa, Nigeria, Egypt, or also other countries like China? Maybe that is the basic question that we really need to maybe address. So the quantum issue is very, very important. I think as we say Africa is rising, it means that there are increasing number of bankable projects. So essentially, the question of resource envelope is going to become very, very important. That's where maybe we need to repackage.
Now I will open up for if there are questions or comments from the audience, and please tell who you are from your affiliation, and maybe someone could help me with the mic. And meanwhile, what Ulrika brought forward on the Sustainable Development Goals and the implementation of that to come from next year on, what role could and should the Africa Development Bank play in that context? And we have a question over there. Maybe someone could help me with the mic and then Bo.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark, very much for a very interesting panel. When we talk about New Africa and the, let's say, the financial or economic landscape, there are two issues I would like to raise and ask the panel to react. Two different, which were not touched today. We talked about innovation. We talked about African Development Bank being more innovative in its products. We talked about innovation in technology like M-Pesa. But what about innovative financing? That's one area which has been discussed in recent years globally and also in African context. Different levies, different like airline taxes, different... And by the way, I didn't say who I am. I'm Ina Sori from the Nordic Africa Institute, sorry. So this whole area of innovative financing, which is being discussed in different fora, as an alternative and additional to aid and private funding. And secondly, an area which I would like to comment, how African Development Bank sees its role in trying to curb the capital flight, because it's a big area. For example, Thabo Mbeki and his high-level panel recently released a report on capital flight, which, if that could be turned back to Africa, would be able to provide quite a number of development initiatives. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Innovative financing and capital flight. I'm Bo Jellström. Another question?
Thank you, and thank you very much for an interesting report and an interesting discussion. I'd like to refer to Ulrika Modere with regard to playing safe with the African Development Bank. May I remind you that only 20 years ago, the bank was about to go bust. And I was head of the African department here in the ministry, dealing with the bank, and at that time, U.S. Treasury called for a meeting with the non-regional banks, and the topic was how could we deal with a call on the callable capital, and that was really huge amounts, and I would say many aid budgets would be just for years they would be depleted. It was a very drastic situation the bank was in. So once again, I'd like to say that the African Bank should be, to my mind, a lighthouse of stability in the African region. And we should really take care of having that in that position. And certainly, I think that you could deal with the issues that you were bringing up, the three issues. There might be a different balance, but still. Also, I'd like to say that Sweden has played a very important and active role in the bank. And I think we can be quite proud of what we have achieved in that institution. Thank you.
Thank you. So, innovative financing, is there a role for the bank? Anna?
Yes, absolutely. But as I stated, I believe that we should build on each actor's and institution's strength and then finding the gaps rather than create a completely new role for the bank. I think there are a lot of actors right now with great competence, but we are not that good of working together and making sure we find these gaps. For example, again, the Lake Turkana project was a huge, or is a huge, wind power project where we really built on each other's strengths rather than doing something new in each institution. So that is important. And the second thing is about innovative financing. You must remember it's not only about capital. Less and less about capital only. It's also about competence, and I think we can do a lot more together by bringing in each other's competence in huge projects. We haven't talked too much about technical assistance. I think the bank and the DFIs have a really important role here. Swedfund and other DFIs are today much more relevant because they can also adds value into the competence when it comes to sustainability matters, and I believe that actually we have a competitive advantage here. It's not seen as something negative that it was for 10 years ago. Now all this indicator, investment or investors know that that has actually brought a lot of value into the companies where private or public investors have invested. So,
Anders?
Well, I think we must reset the debate on taxes in Africa. The company I work for, Tigo, is the second largest taxpayer in Tanzania. Vodafone is the biggest, and we are the second largest taxpayer. So the tax issues are very, very important for investors in these countries. The problem is that the government in some of these countries tends to focus basically what is taxable. Where are there some money in the system and then tax it? And let's be very clear that connectivity in the whole telecom sector is growth positive. It is something that is bringing connectivity, creating a financial inclusion for rural villages, and basically it's not, to be quite honest, it's not a very profitable sector if you look at Africa as a whole. So it's very, very highly taxed. On the other hand, the VAT system, the consumption tax in Tanzania, the rate is very high, it's 18%, but the revenues are less than 3% of GDP. So it's the least efficient VAT system, at least according to the World Bank and IMF, in the world. So if you want to have tax revenues, which many African countries need more of, not the least Tanzania would actually need to have higher tax revenues, then it's about creating an efficient tax system rather than just predatory taxation against foreign direct investments. And I understand that some countries have huge problems, but if we invest for decades in new systems, and then when the systems are in place, the governments come and say, now we will just tax you. Well, what's the reason? I mean, we are contributing. No, we just need the money. Give us the money. That's not the way how to tax an economy. An economy should be taxed where you tax the bad things, pollution and other problems, and when you use the broad tax basis, such as the VAT, rather than overtaxing foreign direct investments. And that, I think, is very important. I would be in agreement with the point that we should keep African Development Bank stable. I think in terms of probably the most symbolic issue is the AAA. The bank should be run so it's a AAA institution. But that, I think, could even so open for broader investment possibility if you would create an IFC vehicle or a standalone vehicle on the side where you could use private capital to a bigger degree. And that, I think, is also along with the proposal from the author.
Now we're coming to a final round, and I will give you 30 seconds each to give us where should the bank be in 10 years from now. But you have the comment before that.
No, I just wanted to add two comments on this innovative finance. I've seen African Development Bank trying to raise local currency bonds in markets that are vibrant, bond markets that are vibrant. And that is very, very encouraging, and we would like to support that. Of course, it goes now hand in hand with what you presented about the sovereign bonds in Africa. Of course, the Kenyan one, you've got one space where they reopened the board, they kept the board on the sovereign board on tap for 3 weeks, and they raised $750 million at close to slightly lower than 5%. You can see it's heavy premium that was bought. So essentially, local currency board that are now being priced at, they are now, we are introducing now an international pricing that is going to help. That you can see that's quite innovative. But they've taken so long to actually activate these local currency boards and can help in terms of financing. On the tax base, and I do agree with you, it's actually trying to develop the market. And that's the point that you raised about developing the market. African markets are very receptive in terms of developing, and the opportunities are available. I think Anders mentioned M-Pesa in Kenya. To date, M-Pesa is actually transacting in a day about 7.3 billion Kenya shillings. That's about 4% of monthly GDP in Kenya. It wasn't there until 2007. I was courageous enough to say, let's have it and let's see what happens. Everybody, multinational banks, told me that we are going to have a bank crisis. We did it. But let me say, since then, even the government introduced taxes on that, you can imagine how it has broadened the tax base. So essentially, for us, we can now talk about effecting savings investment cycles, because the biggest problem in Africa, not only developing the markets, but accessing those markets, they will grow. The African markets are very receptive to interventions to make them grow. And that is where we'll go in terms of helping the market. A simple, a short comment on capital flight. It's really an incentive problem. Let's solve the incentives problem. Incentives must be defined by the institutions. So it comes back to the institutions, and you mentioned institutions. That's where we are. Institutions will define the rules of the game. Institutions will define the appropriate incentives.
Ulrika, what is most important for the bank to be a viable bank for Sweden, so shareholding 5 years from now? One issue that you would like to mention about our relationship with the bank?
Well, I believe that I'm here 2 hours now because I really want to understand and listen, and we're really getting into this and looking also at the other banks. And I think that the World Bank also, as you said, has a way to go. But, I mean, it is important. We want to be a partner. We have been, like you say, for many years. And, I mean, to be a lighthouse and, to be both in the forefront and be able to develop as a strong institution with safeguards and all what we need, even though they could be aligned if there are good local systems. But to be able to be there and not to be outcompeted, I think it has, as far as I can understand, it has had and it will have a very important role even in the future together with the other development banks. And I think it's a good project to work on together, both from the African countries and from countries like Sweden. And
we want to be part of the project.
Yeah, I will go where I started. To eradicate poverty, we need a strong sector, private sector, and I think it's totally dependent on three pillars: strong institution, great infrastructure, and enabling environment for private investment. And the second pillar, I think the African Development Bank has a really, really crucial role to play. And I also will mention the regional focus that a lot of us have mentioned. That is also unique in us.
Thanks a lot. And before leaving the floor to Lars Eikenstein, join me in giving this fantastic panel a give hand.